Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for another season review episode. Today, we're going over the offensive tackles, and joining me to do that is Jacob Abusbatan. You've heard him recently on offense and a defense pod, a guy I met on Reddit, and I really enjoy talking football with him. But Jacob, how are you doing today?
Good, good. Nice little playoff weekend. Had a couple good games yesterday.
Yeah, we didn't have great college football games. I think we can say that at least that Indiana game was terrible, but the particularly that the Bears Packers game was terrific. Didn't think as much of the Panthers and Rams.
Yeah, it kind of came down in the last minute, but it got a little excited at the end. But the up and down of the Packers and Bears game was pretty exciting.
Okay, well, let's set this up a little bit with the offseason of 2024-25 and what the Ravens did, how they were set up going into this 2025 season. The position group has really been central to the Ravens' draft considerations for several years now. And they extended Ronnie Stanley through the 2027 season, and they had Roger Rosengarten, and they still honestly needed a developmental left tackle, really, in particular, to take over for Stanley at some point. And they got that guy in the 25 draft in Carson Vinson. He was selected at the beginning of round five, kind of a weird trade of a fourth round draft pick, moving back five spots and moving up five spots in the sixth round. I've heard explanations of this, but there obviously must have been some difficulty in agreement in terms of who they should draft at that spot when they were ready to go in round four.
Yeah, and that's a deep rabbit hole now that, we can kind of look back retrospectively with some of John's requests now for other roles. I don't want to get down into too deep of a rabbit hole, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was some disagreement on some things. But, yeah, Vincent's a solid pickup. Obviously, we didn't get to see a lot of him, but he did look pretty decent during his time in. People tend to forget about him because I hear a lot of, we need to replace Stanley soon. And you don't really hear him brought up a lot. It seems like people view him more as a right tackle, but I do think he should be fine if he develops into the left tackle.
Oh, I would take it further. I'd say he's left tackle or nothing. Because his body is built completely to play left tackle, very vertical up and down build. He's not a pair, like a lot of right tackles are. He's definitely a guy who will be left tackle nothing. And I really am against any opportunities to move him to guard for that reason. But let's leave that for the discussion of Carson because it's coming later. Ronnie Stanley turned in a pretty good year. We'll talk about him. And frankly, it didn't look good early on, but he came back after the bye and played very well and played durably, which was unexpected, I think.
Yeah, I mean, injury concerns is always something that's up with him. I know early in the season he did have a couple games that he had to be replaced by Notaboom. But overall, like I said, the beginning of the season, once we kind of wrap up him, we'll kind of do like a quick overview of it. But yeah, he had a struggle in the beginning of the season, but definitely kind of progressed and was surprised with the injury not affecting him as much as I thought it would.
So Stanley was signed to a 3-year deal before the season started. The 3-year deal is essentially a 2-year, $44 million deal with a $16 million option for 2027. And so he'll play 2026. The Ravens really need him again to play well and play durably, maybe just as importantly. But then they may have their answer after that. And Roger Rosengarten had a very solid 2024 season, a little bit tainted by the fact that he'd gotten a lot of help in terms of chip and set blocks on that right side. But we're fairly optimistic coming into 2025. We'll get into the results a little later.
Yeah, I mean, just for both of them, actually, I know we've talked about before, the team doesn't necessarily set, who gets the help on chips and stuff like that. But surprisingly, both of them were fairly above average for receiving chip help or lack thereof. So I think both of them had a pretty solid season in that regard, that they were left out there by themselves, again, intentionally or not often.
All right, Joe Noteboom brought in from a long time. I think he was with the Rams pretty much his entire career before. He might have been his entire career. He was in about his eighth or ninth year last year. Wasn't a big pickup, certainly. But it was a pickup the Ravens felt they needed to do in case Vincent was not ready to go. And we can talk about how that worked out a little bit later. But, you know, they had made moves to solidify a core with a developmental lineman, a backup left, a backup tackle in Note Boom, and two guys who they really trusted in terms of Stanley and Rosengarten. And the big loss, of course, McCary went as a UFA to Jacksonville and was the most versatile Ravens offensive lineman. It was funny because after he left, Ben Cleveland really immediately became the Ravens' most versatile lineman, which is weird, and they did not tap into that versatility at all.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually a huge supporter of McCary for years because, you know, he's a great swing player, but oftentimes was put into not natural positions for himself. And you know, that led to a lot of criticism for him. But honestly, just absolutely having that ability to plug into any role that we need was just invaluable. And I think it really, you know, it showed this season. Obviously, again, without going into a deep dive of it, you can talk about Jackson's injury leading to the issues of not being able to escape pressure. But losing McCary wasn't the thing that led to all the issues this year, but it was a pretty big part of it, because when someone wasn't playing well, like, they could have put him in for Voorhees when he was struggling. You know, if Filale was having a bad stretch, they could put him in. So like, they had the options to have him as a swing player when things were needed or injury, and they just didn't have that this year. They kind of had to run with what they had.
Well, I mean, they had backups, I would argue, at those guard positions, but we're going to stick to tackle here, and we're going to move on. So Ronnie Stanley recovered from some awful play before the bye, and just to give you an idea, he played three games in there, and that included a stretch where he had, I want to get this straight here, he scored a total of, oh, come on. Oh, that's why I'm looking at Rosengarten. That's why I can't find a particular place here. He scored 4.5 points between weeks 4 and 6. Kansas City, Houston, the LA Rams. Scored 4.5 points in those games total in 36 snaps. So that was really the nadir of the season. He didn't play well early on. Cleveland, he had an F against Myles Garrett, and it was a deep F, 38 before adjustment. And he had a D against Detroit. But he had a good game against Buffalo to start the season. So you thought, okay, things are not completely hopeless. And then he came back after the bye, and he was basically exactly as expected. He played pretty much the same as he had the last year. Only one bad game was the finale against Pittsburgh, but he otherwise was, had no grade lower than a C minus for the entire post-bye period.
Yeah, eye test, you know, obviously it's Myles Garrett, but yeah, he struggled. I really think even though scoring a little bit better the second time they played the Browns, I just think he struggled really in those two games, and I think that was one of the biggest impact that how people kind of viewed him. Definitely struggled a little bit more in the beginning of the season, but overall, I mean, I think he had a solid season. I felt like he actually had very, if you want to talk about technique, I think very great job mirroring with his depth and everything. I thought he generally had really good pass sets. My only thing, and this kind of was across the line with everybody, is there was more than a few times that when it came to slide protections, I'm just like, I don't know who's messing up here. I think like the biggest one, again, was like recent against the Steelers.
Week 18,
and it's just, yeah. And it's just like, where you have one person going one way, another person go the other way. So I don't want to say that's him or any of the one players, but somebody, you know, had to be wrong in that situation. And there was a lot of times that looked like Stanley was going the opposite way or the wrong way, but you don't really know without being in the huddle.
Well, you have to go with the inferences that are available from the on-the-field information. There was plenty to tell you that Stanley was the guy who had to pick up Highsmith on the outside on that play in particular. And there's really no excuse for it. He has to otherwise have a call that says that somebody else, a tight end who there wasn't one on that side, and or the running back, which is ridiculous, is going to pick up Highsmith one-on-one on that play. And there just wasn't anything like that. So I'm not sure how he got it wrong either, but there's no doubt about it in my mind about who was wrong on that play. And by the way, this is something that is a significant bugaboo for me. the people who say you can't possibly know if you weren't in the huddle kind of thing. No, it's my job to know. That's what it's one of the things we have to do is to try and figure out who was responsible for it. And I would admit there are a certain number of plays per year where you can't know. And sometimes the best thing to do is to give half a pressure each way if something develops of that or a miss each way. But you can reduce the amount of error you have in your modeling by doing the best you can with your inferences and living with a result where you at least don't go all one way or the other. And PFF has to do the same thing. They don't have any special line into what's going on in particular with those things. So anybody outside is working with the same disadvantages. Work the best you can with that. It's like playing poker without the queen of clubs. They did that once on Odd Couple, and they're talking about put a napkin in the deck. I'm like, why do you put a napkin on the deck? Just play without the queen of clubs, and everybody knows there's no queen of clubs.
You know? See, it's interesting though, because I mean, I'll just quickly use that play as an example, because I'm very open to the possibility that because there was a five-man front, and because Queen was looked to be notified as the mic on that play, I think it could have potentially been a slide to the right, and Linderbaum went the wrong direction because Stanley and Jones were responsible for the down tackle and the mic blitz, and then Linderbaum was, because he had a man on a nose up on him, and then there was two bigs to the right. So they
just end up being a pass play though, right? That's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah. Yeah. So there's no way on a pass play, Jacob. I got to tell you, I don't see that as possible. I mean, if this were a run play and they were duo blocking with a down block on the guard there, yeah, perfectly normal. The Ravens leave that edge player unblocked and read option, RPO even, they might have done it. This was just a straight drop pass play, as I recall the play, and I don't see it.
That makes sense, but I'm curious to talk more about the off so we don't get down the rabbit hole, but I am kind of curious a couple of things about it for you.
Okay, fair enough. We can look at the play together after the show's done here. All right, so one of the things about Stanley, and you mentioned some technique things here, he is definitely great mirror, but has always been a guy who gives ground in exchange for that mirror and gets, for more than any other lineman in recent Ravens history, he gets bowled back into the quarterback as a trade-off for that mirroring. It's something he and Jackson have a very synergistic understanding about. Jackson understands there can sometimes be bump pressure coming from those sides. Of course, that becomes more serious when you've got also pressure coming up the middle, which the Ravens had some of this year. You know, they didn't have great pass blocking years from left guard or center. And those were places where they had obviously all the inconsistencies that went along with Falele. Really, it wasn't all about pass blocking in his case, but left guard and center in particular, I'd point to as weak spots for allowing middle pressure. And that did make it a lot more difficult for Jackson to maneuver in the pocket. And it probably magnified some of the situations with Stanley phone boothing it and allowing, being party to some larger events and not just pressures as it often has been in past years. Plus, there's some additional loss from Jackson not really being able to set his feet and not having as good a year as a passer because of it as well.
Yeah, with this as a whole, what I'm looking at it is I've always advocated that we kind of have to, as a team, do things a little bit different due to Jackson's ability. The line does kind of oftentimes block a little differently because they know how mobile Jackson is. I've always preached that when you're on the line, you actually don't block for the quarterback, you block for a patch of grass. And then, the quarterback operates within that. What you're saying with Stanley and that synergy with Jackson, that's something that I wasn't aware of. I'm going to definitely, lean more towards to the amount of time that you spent looking at it, but it does make sense. But you're right. I mean, anytime you're getting interior pressure, if you're on the outside and you're trying to set up your block, again, you're trying to defend a certain area, you're making certain assumptions like that there isn't going to be interior pressure, that, that your quarterback is going to be at that spot for a set amount of time. In the day, linemen don't have eyes in the back of their head. That's one of the main reasons when they either disengage, lose a block, or don't have someone to block, you'll see them turn around to find where the quarterback is because they need to know where they need to go. I do agree. Like, I mean, it feels like Stanley does get pushed back a lot. Now, if you're saying that there's, you know, potentially a little bit of a variation of why that is, that's an interesting point. But I definitely have felt that. Like, we'll talk about Rosengarten. I feel like Rosengarten oftentimes set heavy and then kind of a lot of times what people would call a whiff. I don't think it's necessarily whiff, but a lot of times he'd flat out miss because mm-hmm. he sets heavy. But yeah, I feel
sets
like
heavy and leans in as well. Yeah, I mean, yeah, gets over yeah. his feet. Yeah.
And then, but Stanley, yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, I feel like I did see him a lot kind of just getting bulled. I've always considered that just him getting essentially bulled. But if you're saying that there might be a little more to it, that's not something I've considered before.
I think it's strategic. And, you know, I've watched Stanley's whole career, obviously, and seen the same thing. But, okay, let me define it this way. I'm going to go to the numbers I have. So I have Stanley on the year for 28.5 pressures allowed. That it separates out the quarterback hits and the sacks. Those are not in there. One of the real notable things is that I allow for partial pressures. So he's got a bunch of partial pressures on my log where he's got half or a third of a pressure because somebody else was also responsible for it. PFF has him for 20 pressures allowed. Actually, 20 hurries allowed. Yeah, 20. So the difference between us is in the depth that I require to be protected. Okay, so it's in the cone and how far you can get into it. I say the quarterback has to have 3 seconds and the ability to step into his throw. If somebody's in the cone in that part, then he's allowed a pressure that you know the responsible lineman is allowed a pressure. Stanley, of course, as an offensive tackle, has many more one-on-one assignments. So it's not a question of whether or not he allowed cone intrusion. It's mm-hmm. a matter of did somebody else also allow cone intrusion on that play that would come up. But Stanley has I chart him for way more pressures, and regularly I see Stanley with 2 or 3 pressures on PFF, and I've got him for 4.5. Say so it just it happens much more often. Remember the big thing to note is that since I'll give out a half pressure, and PFF would in theory give out a full pressure on individual plays, the difference is even more pronounced than the incremental 8.5 pressures I have him for.
Yeah. And like, it's definitely, again, for me, I do appreciate the way that you look at it. Like, because I think that that's more in line with what I think is fair versus just like, you know, did they kind of get close to the quarterback type situation? Just because again, especially with a quarterback like Jackson, as mobile as he is, when you're blocking for someone like that, you kind of there is a strategy to it, because if you just try to stonewall a defender and he's got eyes on Jackson makes a move to the left or right, and you're pretty much heavy on blocking him, trying to put your full throw into it, he's gonna see where Jackson's going. He can much more easily pick that side and shed that block than if you're kind of conceding a little bit of ground in order for you to move with the defender. Now, again, personally, I have bias. I was a lineman. My thing is that, like, if you're in the pocket and you have room to throw, you're pretty much protected. That's how I look at it. So I'm
whether or not you step into it, even if you have to throw off your back foot. Yeah, you are biased.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like if it obviously, like, yeah, you need to have at least enough room to have a step into it. But I don't care how close you are. It's if you have that room to be able to make the throw. That's kind of how I do it. But I get it. Like I said, hurries and things like that.
Okay. We need to keep moving here. Yeah. So I'm sorry to do this, but we're already kind of threatening to run long.
No, go ahead.
So a few things about this. Stanley had reduced penalties this year. I think he's had 15 and 10 the last 2 years, had only 8 this year. I remember maybe a 10 and 15, but had a bunch of illegal formation penalties at the beginning of last year. So I wouldn't say it was a huge step forward, but was a step forward to only have 8. What was unfortunate is he had two in the final game against Pittsburgh, including that offensive hold, which was one of his 2 stalled drives for the year. Now, stalled drive penalties don't tell the whole story, because he also had 3 declined penalties. And you could typically bet that all 3 of those, or 2 of 3, also effectively stalled drives, because the defense chose to take the result of the play instead. Oftentimes, that's going to be a third down, a sack, or an incomplete pass that ended the drive.
Yeah, I mean, definitely cleaned up the penalties for the most part as a team, but the last game was was bad.
It was. He only had two failing games, Myles Garrett in week 18. And I'm sorry, I've got the wrong date on this, and it looks like it might be 2024 information I'm looking at. But he's got he had two failing games. It was the Cleveland game in week 2 and the Pittsburgh game in week 18 were his two failing games. Did want to talk about his raw score a little bit. So he came out with a lower raw score this year than last. And it was kind of in some ways, a natural step back. I want to talk about that just a little bit. So 70 last year, 65 this year, which is a little bit of a step back. But I want to tell you where the components of that were. Make sure I'm looking at the right file here. Yeah. So he had his missed blocks were 0.09 of that 30 points in total deduction. So to remind folks, this is a deductions from one system. It's also done by frequency and severity. So you get larger deductions than a one for one on the block if you make a bad play that allows a pressure or a quarterback hit or a sack or have a penalty. So there are other things too, but those are the big ones. Penetrations, which are fairly rare. Those are losses he caused on run plays. He caused 3.5 of those this year. That was 0.01 of his deductions. Pressures were 0.11. That was fairly significant. And quarterback hits and sacks were 0.07. And his penalties were down this year to only 0.03 of that reduction. So you add those up and you should get 30 or 31 points. I'm sorry, you should get 35 points. I'm getting 31, so something is not. Am I looking at the wrong year's file here? No, I'm looking at the right year's file. All right, not sure exactly how this happened because that does not exactly work out to be the correct number there. But that gives you a good characterization of where those deductions come from. Is the misses and pressures are the biggest two. Quarterback hits and sacks put together are number three, and then penalties kind of reduced this year to 0.03. His missed blocks are low for a tackle, and the pass rusher, the quarterback hits and sacks, the kind of the closes, as I call them, they were higher than they've been in previous years, so that's kind of a problem. Effectively, though, I think Stanley played at about a C level for the entire season. He's in the second quartile of left tackles in the league. How would you characterize his overall play, Jacob? Let me just give you a chance to talk about where you think he belongs in the league.
I think that he's definitely not the same top tier player that he was in years past, especially after all the injuries. And we've talked about this in great length. It's hard for me to place a lot of different situations on not knowing, like, okay, is this just Stanley playing poorly, or, you know, I don't really understand what we were doing on this play. So there was a lot of stuff that muddled. I think he had a solid season. I mean, he's definitely well above replacement level, I think, at this point. I think they got a couple years out of him, which is very beneficial to us because of, you know, trying to develop Vincent. But, you know, I think he had a solid season. He just, unfortunately, particularly against the Browns in the last game against the Steelers. And I probably want to throw the Lions in there also, the Lions game. He just had a few real kind of bad games. But the overall season, he was still probably top two overall in our line. So, I mean, you can't really ask, you know, a lot more out of a veteran like that, especially after going through the injuries that he's done. He needs to be replaced eventually, but he's still solid.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, he took a contract that I think was probably a little bit team friendly. The Ravens got exactly what I think they should have expected from him. And if he plays like he did after the bye, which was at a higher level, then they're really going to get value in 2026 as well. But one of the big values that we had was durability from Stanley is I think it was much higher than expected in 2025. And that really was fortunate because Joe Noteboom didn't look very good in the little bit of playing time that he got.
No.
All right, let's move over to the right side. Talk about Roger Rosengarten. In a lot of ways, I think he basically repeated his fine 2024 season. This is just my high level overview, but I want to give you a chance to much less chip and set blocking help to his side. Now, there were exceptions by game, but like Stanley also finished extremely strong after the bye. It was just did a much better job. And some of that is probably, you know, having Rush or Huntley in there, Rush basically for those, you know, 2.5 games or 2.25 games, I guess it was before the bye, but he really played very well after the bye.
Yeah, I think that I had him probably pegged as our worst lineman the first few games, or not first few games, but probably first few weeks. And then, it wasn't the point that like I was like, oh, wow, like he's incredible towards end of the season. But I just stopped having a lot of like, okay, like he messed up there type of situation. I think they're incredibly lucky to have Rosengarten. I don't necessarily, when I watch him play, I don't see that potential for him to be, you know, one of those all-star linemen. But, you know, as long as he stays healthy, as long as he doesn't have any kind of major aggressions, he's pretty much everything you could ask for out of a right tackle. We did mention earlier, I do think he needs to clean up how he handles his pass sets, just because he does get a little over his feet a lot. And I think that even though there's some different stunts that were accredited to him versus Falalele through the year, the two of them really struggled through the year on stunts. And I think oftentimes it was he would give too much ground. Rosengarten would give too much ground before the stunt happened.
Unmatched but, depth, you would call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, unmatched depth, exactly. And overall, though, just I've been impressed. Like I commented on one of her posts. He had a very quiet but very impressive year for being a second-year player, and I think he is ahead of many other second-year players.
Kind of got
lost in the sauce with, you know, all the offensive struggles this year, that he had a really good year.
I'm going to go through that at the end of this, but he is way ahead of most of the other second-year offensive tackles. You remember what a consternation the draft at offensive tackle was for the Ravens in 2024. But basically, he's doing fantastic. The only guy who's well, there are a couple people who are ahead of him, but the only guy's way ahead of him is Joe Ault, and
yeah,
you know, he's what, the fifth or sixth overall pick by the Chargers. I want to talk about a few things with Rosengarten. He played essentially every offensive snap, and that's only 953 snaps. I don't know if he missed like two or four somewhere, but it's basically he's got a full set of snaps for every single game, and I'd have to do a little more detailed work to see if anybody replaced him, maybe for a play or two, but. What's really bad is the Ravens in 17 games only had 953 snaps, which is totally unacceptable. And you've heard me talk about a lot in other shows where I'm complaining about that. I thought good year for demonstrating mobility with level two and pulls. By the way, Stanley did that extremely well too this year. That was one of the really nice durability issues of Stanley that came back, is we're seeing Stanley move around in level two and look for work. And the Ravens have two tackles who really have that want to visible in terms of finding work downfield.
Yeah, no, definitely the both tackles. I felt like, again, there was moments of like, where are you going? And again, I felt like that was kind of, we were getting cute on scheme, but when they had the opportunity to just get to the second level, to really just go after blocks, Rosengarten, I felt like was phenomenal in the run game, not necessarily in his straight up ability to necessarily make blocks, or, you know, there's still times that he missed blocks, things like that, but just his involvement, what you're talking about, his ability and want to find work was just incredible. And that, well, I know we kind of spoke on Stanley already a little bit, but him too, like you're right. I mean, he definitely had head scratchers for the season, but there was never a lack of effort from him that I felt like sometimes I was questioning some of the other linemen.
Very good. Let's see. The next thing we want to get to is basically improved play after the bye. I think we talked about that a little bit already. That you know, he got an F against Buffalo and was the worst for the first couple of weeks. Left guard. Why am I? Voorhees was the worst Ravens offensive lineman. In fact, his two games there, I thought, were worse than any two consecutive games that Falalele has had in the last two seasons. So, in terms of aggregate score, but it was a very bad first game from Rosengarten. Certainly, that did not look good. And then he looked really good down the stretch. Also, the most recent data is the most pertinent, I always say, for offensive linemen. I think it's more likely that he'll be able to repeat his post-bye performance in 25 than some others, probably than Stanley, just because his durability seemed to be an outlier in the second half. But how would you feel about that? Who's the player, and they played at a very similar level, who's the player that you think is more likely to be able to pull off his 2025 second half in 2026?
I have complete faith in Rosengarten if they, especially, like I said, if they have a replacement for online coaching and they potentially have some shifts for scheme, whoever ends up being there next year as the OC. I really, like I said, I don't see the potential for Rosengarten to maybe ever get to the level that Stanley did peak at. Mm-hmm. But moving forward, I think, bar injury, the Ravens are locked in at right tackle for quite some time. He's too solid of fundamentals, and then the things that he does struggle on are things that you can clean up, for me to not look at him and be like, okay, they're good. They can focus other places in the future. So I would definitely pick Rosengarten, and a big part Stanley's age, and you know, you said in his durability. So it's not a knock on Stanley, really.
Okay, but I would agree. Age and durability are what they are. I mean, you're stuck with your age, and that often is closely tied to your durability.
Score wise,
Rosengarten was 0.73 in 2024 and 0.74 in 2025. It does not seem like a titanic increase. A point can be significant, but it's not a titanic increase, certainly. What was much better in 2025 was that he got less help to get to the same point or a slightly better point. Mm-hmm. And that very positive for me. So the other thing that we definitely need to hit on with Rosengarten is, Do you ever foresee a time when the organization really wants to move Rosengarten to left tackle, or do you think he's a right tackle for life?
I know you talked about his build and things like that, and I think ultimately, yeah, you have these points in these builds and profiles of players that like fit what you want, and that's the best fit for what they can do. I don't know. I don't see it, just because I don't think he's consistent enough in his set blocking to play left tackle. I think he would, in a sense, at left tackle.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Be a little bit of a... not necessarily a weak link, but a point of inconsistency for any quarterback. So like if, you know, Jackson's in there, I don't know if Jackson would be able to trust him at left tackle as much as right tackle, just from the natural sense that quarterbacks, Jackson is a right hand, you know, throws right-handed. He kind of has eyes on that at all times, a little easier than his blind side. So no, I don't think they move him to left tackle. I don't think he is consistent enough for that from what I've seen. Now he could take additional steps. You never know. And maybe in the future, yes. But from what I've seen, he can be much closer to being a premier right tackle than even, I think, like a great left tackle.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into the adjectives you're using there, but I think that it's right tackle is the better side for him. And I know that the point has always been, what are you talking about? He defended Michael Penix as a left-handed quarterback at right tackle at Washington. Yeah, that was in the first of all, it was in the pack. So the Pac, whatever they were at the time, the Pac-2, the Pac-12, the Pac-10, whatever you want to call that conference at the time. But we're not talking about a, you know, a Power Four conference anymore at that point. And, you know, he was a guy who really had trouble in the national championship game against Michigan. He made light of that fact, by the way, just as a funny aside. He was at the podium and somebody asked him a question about gambling. I didn't really know how to answer the question, which is great, but he did exactly what you should do in the situation. He turned into a personal anecdote. You know, it is kind of funny because I have a hard time responding to fans who bet on the games. But after that national championship game against Michigan, I got all these people sending me their Venmo address and saying they wanted their money back on their bets. I think it was just one guy who did that to him, but it's actually very funny, I thought. I don't see him moving to left tackle. And I think Vinson should not be lured from left tackles. We've talked about before. Yeah. Now there could arise an emergency where he plays left tackle. So don't get me wrong on this. That's always possible, is that he's either the second guy next year when Vinson's not ready, or he's the third guy, 2 years removed after, or he's the second guy again, because Stanley is retired. All that is possible. But I hope that he does not move back again. And you know, the sad part about it is they have a guy here with 2 years of runway left. And you mentioned you didn't really see him as an all-pro kind of player. I don't want to put words in your head, but you didn't put him as a regular top of the league kind of performer, is what I took from your words.
For Rosengarten?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I look at the guy and I say, well, okay, he's played very well in two seasons. Okay. He played way above expectation as a rookie, and he took a small step forward this year in terms of what he did as a blocker. I think he could be a borderline, not a pro bowler, not all pro rather, but a borderline pro bowler mm-hmm. before his career is over. And it wouldn't surprise me if he makes one or two during his career. The reason I say that is, the runway is very important for offensive line. Those first 4 years, particularly within the Ravens system, and some of this is probably attributable to Joe D, had terrific ability to improve year over year. So we saw a lot of players who just, you know, blossomed in year four. Ryan Jensen, for example. And we've seen all kinds of other players, Rick Wagner and Tony Pashos. If you go back far enough, that's not even in the Joe D era. Where they all of a sudden, you know, really bloomed late in their career, and other players who got better each year, like Matt Skura, Bradley Bozeman. You look at all the linemen, and there's a very predictable growth pattern. If his level of play these past 2 years is to be taken as a real platform for potential improvement, then I think, you know, if you project two more years of improvement, which are, I would still expect would be fairly modest in level, I see him in that discussion, and I'll get to a little bit in terms of his ranking in a little bit why, you know, I think that could be true. I'm with you that I don't think he's so blindingly effective that he stonewalls people so regularly. But, you know, one of the things I really like about him is he's a good 12-6 blocker.
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree with everything that pretty much what you're saying, in the sense that I think he has that ability to be regularly like a Pro Bowl player, especially at right tackle. And like I said, there are guys that just come out and it just clicks. So you never know. Like he could end up being one of those guys. But so real quick, I do want to respond that. So you're saying he's a good 12-6 blocker.
Yeah.
Go ahead and I apologize. I know a lot about line play. I'm not familiar with the current terminology.
It's actually a term on my own. I know you'd listened to the show before, so I'm sorry if you're kind of missing out on this. But 12-6, I mean, think of the pocket as a face of a clock.
Gotcha.
And he takes and let me explain it for the other people out there who might not know it either. He takes his linemen around behind the quarterback often. And this is a technique often right tackles or less mobile long tackles need to use to win a pass block, is they have to take their guy behind the quarterback. Now, sometimes you have a guy who's so fast or so powerful that they cut down on the amount that you can win by, or the amount by which you can push them by that, what I call the back pylon of the pocket. Or they're very dangerous because they're then coming back from behind the quarterback, and they do so with a high motor, and they come in there with a club and the ball's out all of a sudden. It's not like it's a perfect technique. It's more like when I can't get you squarely, this is the technique that I'll use to still win.
Yeah, and that like I said, and that probably I think that's very fair, because where I put his biggest weakness is that defending inside moves. So I haven't really felt like when defenders are on his outside shoulder that he's done poorly. So I would also agree with that. And I'm a big, like I said, I'm a big component of using that technique.
Are you when you say his weakness is on inside move, do you think there's an oversetting issue there that he's starting with his leverage and his set, he's attempting to defend against that inside move more because he knows where its weakness is and he knows he has this bailout technique to the outside?
So I didn't want to make the assumption, but yeah, actually I do think that a lot of times that's why he's setting so heavy, is to try to essentially cut off the defender from making that inside move, knowing that he has that ability to drive them upfield if they do that. And again, to me, that would make sense on, we talked about earlier, those stunts, kind of making himself susceptible to stunts because he's pretty much planting himself, trying to cut the inside. Because what ends up happening is if you're planted and you got that inside player from that stunt coming towards you, that also leaves you getting blown up because you're pretty much not, you're rigid, I guess is a good way to say it. But no, I think you're right. I think he is Pro Bowl level potentially, without a doubt to me. And I do think he really carries the defenders up the field well when the situation calls for it. It's just that inside move that, especially from premier guys like Garrett, I remember one play, he got absolutely blown up and Garrett knocked him back probably five yards and took on his inside move. So that's a weakness of him, but that's something you can work on.
All right, I did want to do the same thing I did for Stanley, and I confirmed that these numbers all add up to the proper amount. So I'm looking, he got a 0.74 raw score, so there's 0.26 in total deductions for the year. How did that break out? We had 0.10 from missed blocks, so very similar to Stanley in that regard, about 10% higher as a percentage of his lost points. Penetrations were 0.02, just a little higher than Stanley, and it's a rounded number there. So Stanley's really about 0.014, and I think he might have been a little bit under 0.02, so very similar there. Pressures are only 0.06, though, so Rosengarten did a better job on not allowing pressures than Stanley, who was at 0.11, and that's where one of the big differences is. And then quarterback hits and sacks were 0.07, and penalties were 0.01, which is a good year for that. So, pretty similar performance across the board, with the pressures being the big difference. We talked about the Pro Bowl possibly in the future. I'll just finish with this. In 2024, the offensive tackles drafted didn't perform up to his level, with the exception of Joe Alt. So those guys are still out there. They're all playing in their second year, and they all played a variety of amount of times, but some missed time due to injuries. But here are their current positions among the PFF, all the tackles who had at least 20% of the minimum snaps. So there was a minimum of right around 100 snaps this year to be at the 20% level. Might have been 118, in fact. So anyway, Alt is number 7, not unexpected, and he'll probably be the Hall of Fame left tackle from that 2024 class. Fair enough on that?
Yeah, I think Alt's pretty good.
Fashanu, who had missed time the previous year, is up to 28. Paul is up to 29th. That's one of the high risers from this group, because he was well behind Rosengarten last year. Rosengarten was 43rd last year, but he's 33rd this year. So right there, it tells you 33rd out of 92 tackles in the group. We're talking about a pretty good player here. I mean, say high second quartile kind of player, or mid second quartile at the very worst. So we're talking about a pretty good player, but he's 33rd, which is fourth in that group. And all those other guys were drafted ahead of him. So I don't think there's a problem with the draft pick order. Fatano is 41st. Latham, who was drafted 11th overall, right? That ended up being one of the real bad picks of the draft, is now 48th. I think he's still got runway, Latham is working with. He could end up being a good player, but for right now, the pick doesn't look great. Mims is 53rd. Now, he came with the tag of being a developmental lineman, but he's still got some development to do. Definitely did improve this year. Fuaga is 54th, and Guyton is 83rd. Now, Guyton is one of the guys they could have taken with their pick in the late first round, and they didn't do. And I think The Cowboys, actually, the Cowboys got him in front of them, didn't they? The Cowboys got him one pick in front. Thank you, Dallas Cowboys, is all I can say about that. All right, let's move on. Talk about Carson Vincent, or do you have anything else to say about Rosengart before we move on?
No, I said real hopeful for him, but it's about wrapped up.
Okay. All right, Carson Vincent. Very famously, Warhop pounded the table for him, and it wouldn't surprise me if DaCosta somehow said, okay, let's have this be a coach's offensive line pick, and they maybe couldn't agree on who the developmental offensive lineman was. They traded then and had that weird trade back, trade up where they lost five spots in round four, actually went into round five, and then picked up five spots in round six. But for whatever reason, they weren't ready to make that selection. And then we've all seen the phone call, I'm sure, by now about how the phone got handed over to Warhop as a guy who really pounded the table for him.
Yeah, I mean, I've, like I said, we'll talk a little bit more about it. I've liked what I've seen from Vincent. Obviously, we didn't see a ton. And I will be interested because I've been pretty vocal. Nothing against like anything personal, but I'm not a huge fan of Warhop. So I am kind of interested to see if that, you know, the validity of that story, you know, is 100% true or whatever, how Vincent eventually develops, because I like what I've seen from him so far, but it's obviously been a very small sample size.
Right. There's very strong evidence that it's true. And the reason I say it is I watch these guys work together in OTAs in particular, but even at a camp. And Vincent is an overcoached player. He gets, and you know, he's a developmental player, so he should be coached up a lot. But he talks about him almost every rep, or he did particularly during before camp, before all the other players got there, about every single set, all his, you know, get your arms extended, you need a punch on that. You know, it's just he had something to say about every single rep that he was taking. These are not high-level, full-speed reps. He's taking brother-in-law reps against defensive linemen who do want to make the team, admittedly. But, you know, it should be a case where, you know, there's a normal amount of things going right. And this extended to the offensive line playing against each other on the positional drill reps where they're on the side and you know, one offensive lineman is just holding up a pad and trying to make it easy, basically, for the other offensive linemen to execute their block correctly. So a lot of very specific coaching from Warhop. I think it's very clear Warhop has a lot invested in him. And I think, like you, I think there's a pretty good chance they move on from Warhop this offseason, but it could be the legacy that you know, Warhop gives us in addition to some of the attention to detail on penalties and whatnot, is that he's the guy who got us Carson Vincent.
Yeah, you bring up a fair point. If I'm going to give him any roses, like, they were amazing with the penalties this year as opposed to the years in the past. So it's not like, so that's why I never full-on-fledged say dislike anyone. But, yeah, that is a great point. Like, they did clean up a lot with that stuff.
So Vincent played 178 preseason snaps. Now, that would have been unusual in any year. It's unbelievably unusual in the three preseason game era. Yeah, you play 170. That's 60 snaps a game, basically. You're playing. It's one of the highest totals in the entire NFL this year, any position. There might have been somebody who had more, but he was right up there near the very top of plays. And he was getting in the second quarter and playing basically the whole game after that, or even in the first quarter in the final game, I believe. I did not expect him to see him on the field in any meaningful way during the regular season this year. And that basically is what happened, but he was the third offensive tackle active down the stretch for the final seven games. The fact that he played six snaps, that's right on expectation, right on, maybe even a touch higher. The fact that he was the active offensive tackle backup for seven games, that's unbelievably past the mark for me in terms of what I would have expected in terms of game day activations.
Yeah, and we'll talk about Notaboom here in a second, and it's not fair to say these things in hindsight, but sometimes I almost wish he would have gotten Notaboom snaps. You don't always want to throw, you know, a rookie out there. You want to give them time to develop, but with the production that we got from Notaboom, I almost wish we would have transferred that experience over to Vincent instead.
Would it be fair to say that it's unlikely that he would have been ready to play in those games too?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But given, like I said, given the outcome, Yeah. Hindsight.
Yeah. Well, you have that. I'm not sure he would have been better. I think he could have been worse, but I think there still could have been a positive gain from it. Well, first of all, they lost those three games. So you got your hindsight in that respect. But second of all, you've got the fail forward value of that. And that's NFL tape against real players playing at 100% who want to try and beat you. I mean, you learn from that more than anything. You learn a lot more from your failures than from your wins. When you come up with every justification for your wins as to why it was all you and your technique without inspecting it too closely, human beings are actually probably averse to inspecting what they did well in a win as opposed to what they did poorly in a loss. They're more amenable to looking at what they did poorly in a loss, particularly if you're an offensive lineman, because they have to learn from that. If they won, they're like, oh, it was great. We had them all the time. Hand placement was good. I pretty much did everything I'm right. And where I made up, some small errors, I made up for it kind of thing. The people in business who do that are the most annoying in terms of basically not trying to inspect what they did right and what they maybe did wrong, even though they won. But anyway, we did see him play six regular season snaps. Now, three of those were kneels against the Bengals, but he did play three snaps in anger against an opponent. And one of them was his first NFL block where it was actually a passing play. And he had three separate blocks on a sigh on an extended play, did a wonderful job of maintaining engagement through a long play. And oftentimes, as you know, as a lineman, you need to maintain that engagement in stages, meaning that guy's going to break off after you. You have to figure out, how do I replace relative to the quarterback, then pick him up and block him again. He had three separate engagements with a sigh on the same play that I ended up scoring a highlight block on that. It was truly exceptional to see that on his first NFL play.
Yeah, and your little note on him, I think we can kind of tie the bow on it, is right on the spot. Excited, but we don't know who he is yet. But I definitely feel excited for him. I think there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah. I really hope that the Ravens don't feel the need to go out and get another offensive tackle in this draft. But I guess they could get a swing guy, would be the other possibility. Mm-hmm. Get a guard tackle. I don't have any objection to that, but we'll talk about it a little later. I think from a roster perspective, I think that would be the way that would make sense, because you don't really want to have four offensive tackles on your offensive line group, not four pure offensive tackles. All right, Noteboom, let's not spend a lot of time on him. Obviously, he didn't do particularly well, mopped up for Stanley in weeks 4 to 6. He had an aggregate score of 0.57 on a raw basis, only 9 snaps after the bye, and he was replaced on the roster for weeks 10 to 11 and 14 to 18. So right there, after the bye, 8, 9, 12, and 13 were his only weeks as an active player. So I don't see a way he's back, but I don't see a reason for him to be back. And he's a pure offensive tackle. Vincent's a pure offensive tackle, and Rosengarten Stanley are pure offensive tackles. Your roster can't really support more than 3 full-time tackles, or you have a hard time. Either have to carry 10 linemen, which the Ravens have been averse to do, or you have to have a 5-to-make-3 situation on the inside, which isn't really comfortable either. You'd rather have one swing guy who can play guard or tackle, and they had it with McCary, for example. Tyree Phillips would be another one. Doesn't mean the player can play either position well, by the way, obviously, in Tyree Phillips' case. But it's more common to have that.
Yeah, I don't want to dump on him, but I'm definitely not going to miss him being gone. Like, you see all these aggregated, like, linemen, O-line scores and stuff that were coming out week after week, and it's just, people were raging about the lines overall, scores and stuff. I'm like, dude, especially the first half of the year, through week 6, it's just if you like PFF at all, the guy just absolutely had terrible grades. But again, it's just, I don't know what the reason was. I just definitely know he's one of the few people I'm like, yeah, I don't want to see him back without a doubt for any reason. And I don't have that happen very often.
I don't see it happening. I don't see him having a role on this team. So going into 2026, let's talk about it. Offensive tackle is a position where the Ravens have the luxury, and I really mean that when I say it, of not drafting a tackle this year. Whenever you need a tackle, it looms over your entire draft like a cloud in terms of all the draft capital you're going to have to expend to get a player who's good, because you're going to have to reach probably for a player above the round where they should be drafted. I think I'd even argue that they probably did reach for Vincent even at the beginning of the fifth round. He could end up being a very good player, but I just think that they felt like they had to draft him earlier rather than wait. They had other options. They could have drafted a defensive tackle that they really needed at that spot that they would have used immediately, and they didn't do it. So they definitely suffered because of their choices in reaching for Vincent.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's more than a luxury position, and it's a very fortuitous just because we did talk about it in one of the other podcasts. Very likely that both definitely Filali is gone, and then I still think it's up in the air with Linderbaum just because like they definitely need to sign him, but given what the year was like and what he's going to cost, like I think there is a possibility. It's up in the air. I'm, of course, leaning to them retaining him because of the need. Mm-hmm. But they may have to have a heavy focus on the interior, which, unfortunately, the reason I'm hoping they keep Linderbaum still and find a way to make it work is because I think that they should have enough funds to go get a decent, to use the word journeyman guard for the guard position, allow Jones to potentially have some play time. And then go get a swing guard. Like I do think that I agree that they really need to have the swing player. It's been so much of our team's success over the years is having one of those guys that can play multiple roles, whether they're great at it in those roles or not. That's been such a boon that I really think has, you know, from the 2018 to 2024 is why our line particularly was one of the best in the league often. Was having that availability.
Thinking historically through the players that have played guard and tackle, I can't say other than McCary, who really is the one guy who played both positions at a above the replacement level one. They've had a bunch of other guys who haven't done that. And Ja Reed, Ramon Harwood never really played tackle for the Ravens. He was kind of bumped in right away. I'm trying to think of the other guys who fit this thing. Tyree Phillips, certainly not good enough at either position. Falele, I think a lot of people would say, certainly wasn't good enough at tackle. Let's put it that way. I think his play at guard is kind of underrated, but it's still not what everybody wants, but it's a little bit underrated, but they really haven't had that great swing player other than McCary is really the one guy. James Hurst is a guy who played some of both positions. He was very up and down at tackle, but was decent in the start of 2018. Got a lot of help, but he was decent playing there at that point. And he was decent at guard at times, learned to be a pretty good puller. I think he might be a player I'd point to as one of the better swing guys that they've had. His early play at tackle in his career was atrocious. I mean, some of the worst I've ever seen, some of the games he had, particularly the 2014 game. They went into Houston in December, critically important game. They needed to win it and then win their next one to be in the playoffs. And Houston wasn't particularly good, but they had J.J. Watt, and J.J. Watt just mauled him in that game for a score that was right around zero for the entire game. So it might have even been slightly negative for the game. It was just a horrific, horrific performance. So I'm not sure I could pick too many players that have been good guard tackle. Can you think of another one? I just gave you about 30 seconds there, I think.
No, that was the caveat of good, whether it was good or bad. I do strongly feel that even if they weren't potentially great, I'm thinking Phillip, I'm thinking Hurst, I'm thinking McCary. Obviously, McCary being the best of them. It kept the ability of the leaving the other positions more intact, I think was a big part of the success. So they weren't great themselves. I just think having a swing player has led to the overall success, even if that player themselves were not particularly great.
All right. What else do we have to talk about? The focus is all going to be on rebuilding the interior this year. So the only thing, and they could go out and get a guy again. Josh Jones might have been a guy. Now, we really didn't see him play in Baltimore at all, but he might have been a guy who could play at both guard and tackle. It's that kind of player that I'd be just fine getting as a reserve. You keep Josh Jones is not cheap to get him because, you know, he gets backup tackle money that can end up being like $3 to $5 million in a year that he might get. The Ravens can't afford to spend that on multiple positions, or they'll be really down in terms of the star players that they can get. So at some point you got to take the chance with the guys you have and hope people don't get hurt. And I think the big three are going to be the guys they depend on in 26, but the starters and Vincent.
Yeah. I think for me, the number one thing is really finding a better, I guess, synergy with coaching as well. I think that our guys that we have had and will have definitely aren't going to be potentially all-star players, but I think they we have enough talent that it can be elevated with proper coaching.
This is the Ravens' opportunity right now with Warhop at the current age, with the new regime coming in. I don't think there's any reason to expect loyalty to Warhop from the new coach. He's going to bring in his own old staff. I hope if it's a coach like Minter, that he'll have the wisdom to cast a very large, very wide net in the search. This is not a hire that Eric DaCosta gets to choose for Jesse Minter if he's the coach, for example. It's Minter's choice, and that's his silo to control the coaching. By the way, you can't really take away that from him on a case-by-case basis, or you neuter his ability to make these kind of hiring decisions potentially for all time, or potentially you could even scare him away from the job. If you told him, hey, we're going to hire this guy and this guy and this guy, you got to try and make do with these. It'll be a negative for him if he's taught to do that. But that said, I wonder if Jesse Minter has the set of personal connections and understandings at the college level that would allow him to find an offensive line coach that's, say, outside of the Big Ten, where he coached at Michigan, and is a guy they think they can trust to be the kind of teacher and long-term survivor that they would want. Because really, an offensive line is a dynasty coach you can pick there.
Yeah, I'm not a big names person. I just hope that they, like I said, I hope that they do make some changes, because I think that overall we had a lot of regression and underperformance just based on a lot of the overall scheme. I think, again, I just saw too many mistakes even from the veterans in Lindy and Sandy this year. And again, it's not to do away with any of the mistakes the players made themselves, because there was more than enough as well. But I'm excited for guys like Emory Jones Jr. I'm excited for anyone else that they bring in or potentially draft. And then, of course, Vincent with what I would consider, you know, hopefully a solid backing from an O-line coach. I think there's a lot of potential there with who we have already and hopefully who we can add. I'm not as concerned, I think, as some people are, as long as we get proper coaching.
Right. I'm with you. I think, you know, one of the other players we haven't talked about who's taken a lot of heat but still has runway left is Andrew Voorhees. And the Ravens are going to have to kind of determine what they have pretty quickly, whether they want to stick with Voorhees. And I think he's likely to be at least in competition for a starting role this year. It actually would surprise me a little bit. Well, it would have shocked me if he didn't have a surprise. Well, that's not true. It would have been a surprise if he hadn't been a starter, if Harbaugh stayed with a new, you know, set of coaches. I don't know what to think about whether or not they'll want Voorhees around. I think they'll want Voorhees around as a backup, at least with 2 years of runway. But I think their real question is how much can they get out of him? And they should still be able to find some value in a player like that. But they're going to have a new coach come in, and that's going to have to be one of the priorities, is trying to get him right.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to be regulated to backup. But I think his build, his ability, the times that he does well, that you see him do well, I think there's potential to coach him up and make him a decent player at least a backup level. But it's just between his mental mistakes, the coaching, and whatever else, he just looked not great this year.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jacob, always a pleasure talking football with you. We always run a little bit over in terms of time. We've done it again. But tell folks where they can talk football if they want to with you online.
Yeah, you can definitely specifically meet me on Reddit. My handle is Spitan89, SBITAN89. And generally, the easiest place to find me really is on any of Ken's posts through Reddit. Always, like you said, always like to contribute to his posts.
I got to say, I really have been appreciating the Reddit community and the Reddit community kind of had a bad rep in the past for being very memeized because it has a video component to it, and people, you could post your thing and then the video, or sorry, not the video, the picture that you put with there, the meme was on there. So there was a lot of meme content out there, a lot of Buck Allen memes at one time. I found that the actual people who are out there on Reddit, there are some tremendously thoughtful people about football. And that's how I found Jacob, and I found several other people too. And you know, if dig into some of those posts where there's obviously good discussion happening, and you'll see the quality of the discussion there is very high. And you know, try to stay away from the meme stuff, and you'll find more of that, obviously. But I'm really appreciative of how that community, how good they are right now. And how many, it's always been a very large community, but you know, it's an exceptionally thoughtful community, I think, as well, in terms of how good it is. I appreciate meeting you over there, Jacob. Let me talk to other people out there. If you've got a question, use hashtag film study mailbag. I'll try and get to that in one of the three potential ways, either for a 1 to 3 minute video, or I'll direct it to the appropriate shows. In particular, if we haven't done the show yet on any of the other position groups and you have a question, get that in now, particularly if you've got a roster strategy idea for that group, then I'll definitely bring that up on the appropriate show. Jacob, thanks again for coming on.
Always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.